right, everyone, welcome to the Fundamentally Sound episode 50, powered by CLNS Radio, CLNS Media. Host Marcel Riggs joined with Ben Brust. Ben, what's going on, man? Episode 50.
Half a century. Dude, that's a lot of episodes.
It's a lot of episodes. There's been tears. There's been drinking. It's been a whirlwind.
There has been tears because that was this is going back to Kentucky losing to Luke May.
And the Chris Chioza Wisconsin ending.
Yes. Did I have tears or was I just angry?
I think you had tears too. That's still one of my favorite episodes that we did.
Yeah, like that's one of those where like I know it was really like fun, but I won't go back and listen to because I will cringe at how drunk I was. You ever get in that like you just don't want to know
and listen
to how ridiculous you sound.
Yeah, whoever I talked to last night, I feel that way about.
crazy week, crazy weekend. I think the main majority of what we need to talk about is Michigan State.
I mean, we have to. Like,
and I think you should preface everything like – so, you know, there's probably some listeners who know something's going on, but like at least break down what is been reported.
So the we'll avoid the whole overview of Michigan State. Like, I don't want to get into the football stuff. I don't want to get into the Larry Nassar stuff. But from a basketball standpoint, the two main stories that I don't know necessarily came out, but in the report involved Travis Walton as a grad assistant in 2010. And then Keith Appling and Adrian Payne, and their allegations of sexual assault. I think it was allegations of rape as well.
It was first the assault to the bar that got off for littering.
That was Travis Walton, right, with the sexual assault.
And then there was another Travis Walton for
rape. Travis Walton was sexual assault, I believe, allegations, and Adrian Payne and Keith Appling's allegations were not good. Like, that story was tough to read. And the whole premise is essentially that Walton left as a grad assistant to go play in Europe. Appling and Payne, the allegations were dropped, I believe. And so therefore they weren't suspended or anything like that. But what really came out in the OTL report is the fact that it's just kind of like a hostile environment and questioning, Tom Izzo's ability to manage the team and program.
And Michigan State has, you know, come out and said they have not handled everything according to federal standards.
Yeah, there's a lot of legality issues there, which I don't even know because I'm not a lawyer. You know,
every lawyer that I've talked to says it looks really bad.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look good. But what I want to focus on is Tom Izzo because, you know, it's Tom Izzo. It's Michigan State. It's one of the most successful programs and coaches in all of college basketball history. And this is a major story. I've been fighting people from East Lansing the last 2 days about it, because apparently I'm trying to catch somebody in a scandal, which let me state this. I have not once called for Tom Izzo to be fired. I'm not calling for him to be fired. Like, I'm fine with him still being the head coach of Michigan State until this entire investigation is completed, and then we'll go from there. I've had a problem with how he's addressed the issue through his press conferences. And I know it's a tough situation for him because you kind of have to bite your tongue a bit with everything going on because, you know, it is a legal issue, right? Like, you can't just, you know, if you're under investigation for a crime, if it's me or you under investigation for a crime, there's only so many things you can say without implicating yourself or others. So I understand that.
But he was asked a personal question, like an opinionated question about how he feels that he handled it, if he would do anything different, does he regret anything? And he said, you know, we'll cooperate with any investigation. And to me, like, that speaks volumes into guilt.
So it's not even that. I've been talking to numerous people about this that A, are a lot smarter than me, and B, I value their opinions. And one guy is a Michigan State guy. A couple others are not Michigan State people. So I've heard it from both sides of these people that I trust and their opinions and hold weight to what they say. My biggest problem is when he says something like that, and, you know, he has the buzzwords of healing and survivors. He's almost hiding behind them. Like, if you truly want to be part of this process, you can't say, I want to be a solution to help heal the survivors, and then every answer be, I cooperate with everything. Like, that something has to change there. And
first off, the correct way to say it anyways is you stand with the victims.
Right.
You stand with the people who have been victimized.
One of the guys who I trust, World of Isaac on Twitter, he is a Michigan State guy. He put it a very good way, and I'm going to pull up what he said. And what he said and what I believe is what Izzo should do is – Izzo should say something along the lines of, quote, I won't be taking any questions or addressing the OTL investigation, but I will have a statement soon in regards to Travis Walton. Now, that question comes, does that open up stuff with Appling and Payne? But that, at least, I respect that answer a lot more than I've cooperated with everything and I will cooperate with everything.
Yeah, there's been no substance to anything. There's been zero transparency, which to me is a problem. Like, I know there's legal issues, but, like, you can still go off the cusp if you think it will help build the solution. And he's just saying, I want to be a part of the solution without helping there be a solution.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much stuff I'm really annoyed with this. And I understand, like, hey, you can't just open up, you know, speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I hate the people defending him saying, well, he shouldn't be answering questions like that after a press conference or after a game. And it's like, well, when is he going to do it? Right? Like, coaches only speak limited times, and it's planned press conferences after games and then their weekly press conference. If he's going to do it at his weekly press conference, say that during the post-game presser. Don't sit there and just, you know, read the blanket statement. And then, like, you know you're going to get asked questions. You have to say something along those lines and then work with the lawyers. Work with the school and the school's lawyers of saying, okay, let's put out a statement with a little bit of more substance, because otherwise we're going to – every press conference is going to end like it did today after Maryland.
So what's the best case scenario for Tom Izzo right now?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Coach next year?
I think so, but I think we need to see what comes out of the investigation, right? Like, if it comes out more, or if Izzo somehow did something truly wrong, then I don't see how he can. But like I said, I've never called for his job, and I'm not going to until the full report, the full investigation comes out of what happened with him and the players and everything. But I don't know what best case scenario is. I think best case scenario is he just puts out a statement with a little bit of substance to at least address the issue. Like, what's the problem with me is not the problem. Cassius Winston had the best response out of anybody here, and he's a 19-year-old kid.
I missed it.
So I'll pull up his exact quote, but it was today after the game. Brendan Quinn, he covers Michigan and Michigan State basketball for The Athletic, had it out there. And the quote was from Cassius Winston, the background is Cassius Winston was asked about if players are seeking out information or isolating themselves and just focusing on the game. And Winston said, "You don't put up walls. This is real life. This is a terrible situation. This is something we're going to use to tell our daughters one day, or our sons especially. You can't ignore it. You've got to listen to it. We have to listen. We have to discuss. That's when you get answers." That's better than anything I've heard from any Michigan State administrator, you know, trust board member, whatever. Cassius Winston had the best response.
So to me, I just feel like there's something more there. There's so much more left to be seen based off how the athletic director retired, in quote unquote retired. Like that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. 2 days before that outside the lines report comes out, he knew it was coming out. He knew there was something going on that was going to put him, you know, on the front lines of everything that's going on. And he said he's going to retire to explore what's next in his life with his wife. It's the biggest cowardly act I think I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily care too much about that because he was going to be out regardless. Like, when this report came out, people would immediately have called for Hollis's job. You know, I just hate the people that sit there, like, and it's not the people, it's Michigan State fans that are sit there just blindly defending it because it's, yeah, you know, I'm going to read some of these messages I got because that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is the fact that you can't call out Izzo or criticize something that's said without Michigan State fans up in arms. Like, I have some moron, and I'm going to use their names because fuck them. Zach Tesser, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing right, nor do I care. And he's like, "You should stop tweeting about Michigan State. You're just wrong on so many levels and trying too hard to catch someone in a scandal. It's lame. Get a real job. Do something productive with your time." No, I'm creating dialogue about a situation that's a serious problem at your program and your school. And Michigan State fans that sit there and go, "Well, what about other schools? And this has to be happening elsewhere if it's happening here." Yeah, you're probably right, but that's not the issue. Like, you can't play the what-if game. We know this is happening at Michigan State. We need to talk about it. Like, the issue is the fact that people aren't talking about this. Like, we have to find a solution, like Cassius Winston said.
You know, you're exactly right. To me, this seems crazy how it still feels a little under the radar to me in terms of, like, national scale. You know, and for the Penn State situation, think back to people defending – that whole Penn State situation early on when there wasn't as much information out and how quickly that backfired.
Yep.
So I would just say, like, what good does it get to have an opinion on something and to try and defend your school and your university without even knowing yourself? Cause it could really end up backfiring.
So here's another one I got, and this is a problem. Like, this is not how people should be responding. Trevor Lang, again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name right, nor do I care, because I think you're a fucking moron. "Dude, it's because here at Michigan State, we're going through a lot of tough times. Our school covered up a sexual monster. Our president was part of our cover-up. Now our AD resigned too. We need to have somebody to guide us through these dark times, and who better than our very own God King Izzo?" Like, if that's serious, that's a problem. Like, people keep holding, like, these coaches and administrators in this high standard. Like, whatever they say is right.
Wrong.
Like, all right, you played Division I basketball for a well-known coach at a well-known program. If something like this happened at Wisconsin, and let's say it happened a couple years before you, and Bo Ryan's now under the hot seat, as a player, what are you thinking about when you look at Ryan?
Honestly, like, so, I mean, I couldn't even imagine. Like, I don't even know how Michigan State has won the two games that they have, especially being down 13 today, because, like, it would just suck everything out of you, especially when you know someone that you trusted and trusted to go play for and get an education for because of that person, that they're the problem. Man, I don't know.
Was there anything, not obviously nothing like this serious, but were there any sort of problems like this at Wisconsin when you were there? Did you have to deal with anything along, not as serious as this, but along these lines, for lack of a better word?
I mean, I think it's clear that stuff had happened while I was there, but I did not know about it, and nor did anyone on the team until later on.
So you never dealt with something like, you know, in the locker room where you either have to look at a teammate or a coach or assistant coach or a trainer or something like that and be like, something's, you know, you hear the story, you know, like this, a report coming out and then having to deal with it for the entire year.
Yeah, nothing I can think of outside of that. But regardless, you know, if I'm in that locker room with Michigan State, I'm conflicted because at this point, you know, I bleed green and white.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and my coach is in the news. Eventually, that's going to catch up to them. And when I say that, just like catch up to them because it's going to be draining mentally. You're going to be looking behind your back. You're going to be questioning how, you know, how legit is the person that I'm learning from every day. It's going to boil to a head at some point. And I think right now they're riding the wave of, we don't really know what's going on, but rumors are going to start. Rumors have already started, and it's going to be a tough, tough year for Michigan State to endure this for, the next 2 months?
Yeah. I just hate the people that are sitting there like this is some sort of witch hunt. Like, no, we are responding to the comments that we are hearing from Izzo, from, you know, the school and everything like that. Like, I have a problem with everybody involved. And again, I understand that.
And I completely agree with what you're saying earlier. Like, when I tuned in yesterday, I never would have stayed on Fox Sports 1 and sat there for a press conference as the same thing for pretty much 90% of the other people who stayed on Fox Sports 1 so they could hear from Tom Izzo.
Yeah.
I expected him to come out with a statement or at least address, you know, bring something, say, I will have a statement. But instead, it was, I'll cooperate with the investigation. I stand with survivors, all that. You know, it didn't bring any clarity or bring any solution.
Which
it
is just fine. Like, the Friday press conference, like, the report had just come out right before the game. So I'm okay with him kind of having the more blanket statement during that press conference because, okay, the report came out at, 2:30, 3 o'clock. The game was at 7. Like, that, I understand. Like, you're already at the gym. You're already, you know, preparing for the game. Today's press conference I had a little bit more of a problem with because he could have – he had to know that questions like this are coming, and I thought he could have – answered it a little bit better than, again, just a blanket, I've always cooperated.
Correct. No, I mean, I stand by that.
And I'm not asking for definitive answers from him because, again,
But when will we get those? Because
To me, that's part of the legal thing. Like, he can't give definitive answers on stuff if there's an ongoing investigation, just from the legality standpoint. But he could have given a definitive answer on whether or not he had regrets. Like, yeah, you know, obviously if you say yes, then you're probably implying some sort of guilt. But if you truly believe you did nothing wrong, say that.
But he didn't even say no, I don't have regrets. So, you know, him avoiding that question means it's a yes, which means guilt, which means he's done something wrong, which means it's going to come out eventually.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, if he truly believed he did nothing wrong,
we would have heard it right there.
Like, would anybody have been in uproar if he said, you know, no, I truly believe we handled it correctly based on all the information we gathered from
our previous investigations of this.
Right, like during, like, the, from, you know, whatever the you know, criminal attorney or whatever the attorneys told us, you know, as the investigation happened originally back in 2010.
And clearly that's not the case. And that's why this is crazy to me that you're getting these tweets of people defending him and defending Michigan State right now. If I was a Michigan State grad, I would just be silent, hoping for the best, preparing for the worst.
Yeah, man, it's weird. Like I said, you know, like I'm not calling for his job until everything comes out because he may have handled everything correctly and it could have been superiors, you know, his superiors that handled it incorrectly, in which case they're already gone. That's fine. But, and you know, until then, he's Tom Izzo. Like, he carries weight. He can sit down with lawyers and the school and kind of force a better statement than what's being said. If he truly wants to talk, and Izzo is someone that truly would want to talk from what I know. It's not like he's a rookie head coach. He's Tom Izzo. He can force the issue if he really wants.
Man. Yeah, and I urge people to go look at the highly retweeted video at Josh_STIRN.
Yeah, that was from today's the press conference after the Maryland game with the OTL investigative reporter asking him the questions.
And I think he handled the he handled it correctly.
Yep, but the problem I had was the
question.
Regrets. Yes.
Yep.
And
to me, that screamed guilt.
And my question is, if, you know, this is going to continue. Like, there's going to be questions after every single game like this until there's, you know, more definitive answer or something else comes out. But at what point does he kind of snap?
He's
a human, right?
Eventually it happens, right? Like eventually he'll just be like, he'll say what's on his mind.
Right. Dude, I mean, that's just...
I thought he was closer today.
He looked, you know, for the first time in the 2-3 days that this has been going on, he looked agitated. Not, I don't know if agitated is the correct word. He looked frustrated for the first time.
He looked ready to share what's really on his mind.
And, you know, it's natural human behavior to eventually kind of snap when you get asked the same thing over and over and over and over again, which he rightfully should, because, you know, it's an investigative reporter. They're just doing their job. Like, people mad at the reporter blows my mind. Like, I thought the reporter asked good questions.
They were legitimate questions.
They were very legitimate questions. It wasn't, you know, tell me what's going on. You know, it wasn't anything dumb. It was very direct, you know, important questions to be asked.
I got a hard time believing that he will. Man, just by the look, I'm just saying, like, if I had to guess, I don't think he would have a job by next year with Michigan State, if not sooner. If I had to guess.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not calling
for his head. It's just hard for me to believe. Man, with everything that's gone on outside of the basketball program, that it's all not interconnected and they just need to clean house and start over. Because it goes beyond basketball. And that's where he's going to get hurt by it.
Yeah,
if this isolated basketball incident, I would say he's got a better chance because he's been there so long and how much he's respected. But, man, it looks terrible that it's coming right up, you know, coming out again after what's happened with the Nassar stuff.
And if, you know, if he ends up being clean with everything, because that's still a possibility, and if he is, I hope he leads the charge to help survivors and everyone else in the community. Like, he should be the face of it. If regardless, he should be the face of it, but especially if he ends up, you know, getting exonerated in this whole thing. Because he's Tom Izzo. Like, that's the crazy thing. It's Tom Izzo.
I'm just ready for answers. I want more answers. I was hoping the special report this morning on ESPN, the Outside the Line stuff, would bring out more, but it's really just a recap of the digital article.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know when more stuff will come out or anything like that. But, again, if you are tweeting at me that I'm trying to ruin Tom Izzo or I'm on a witch hunt or I'm the liberal media, which is also funny when people ask me if I'm a Trump, I'm not a Trump. I'm related to another president, but not Trump. That's for goddamn sure. So it's kind of funny being called liberal media and Trump at the same time.
Yeah, that's what the internet's for. It never ceases to amaze you.
Yeah, people are dumb. Like,
I love the internet though.
I'm just, you know, I dealt with it with Penn State fans growing up in Pennsylvania and listening to them try to defend Paterno and, you know, whoever during that thing because it's a cult and it's just like flashbacks when it comes to, and I'm not saying Izzo is Paterno here.
But
that right,
the way
but
this is all unfolding slowly is starting to feel like it, and seeing the press conferences and hiding behind and people getting let go. And
the
more
the student section chanting "We love Izzo" like the other night, like that's just weird.
Yeah, how could? Oh man, they're just in it as deep as Izzo is. Then,
like it's just weird. I mean, I get it's college kids. They're not. I mean, college kids are dumb. Like when I was in college, I was dumb as shit. So you know, I don't know if they truly understand what's all going on, but this is just something I have zero sympathy for when it comes to coaches or administrations or schools or programs if they're you know, involved in this type of thing. It's just something I've kind of zero things for. Any sort of sexual assault, rape allegations, things like that, man, I don't care if I hurt your feelings by saying I hope you'd lose. Like Minnesota, I hope Minnesota loses every game this year. I have zero problems if Minnesota fans take offense to that.
Well, they're doing that for you.
Yeah, they suck, which I'm happy about. Like, I'm thrilled. Like, I think
Richard Pitino, I can't watch him coach, man.
Yeah, I think we said it before where any of the good guys on the roster, I truly feel bad for them, but I want them to lose every game.
Let's get to a little basketball, maybe.
Yeah, let's talk hoops. Because it sucks having to talk about Michigan State, and it sucks having to talk about off-the-court stuff. Yesterday was wild, man. How about that start to the day with NC State, UNC going to overtime? You had Duke, Virginia early. You had Florida beating up on Baylor early. You had Texas Tech kind of coming from blowing the lead, then coming from behind against South Carolina. Even like Ball State Akron went into double overtime with some like wild shots.
Yeah, no, I want to touch on North Carolina and NC State. That was an awesome game.
Stop calling North Carolina a top 10 team this year?
I was just going to say North Carolina had won four straight, but really hadn't played anyone so significant where I was still buying in. And then they did exactly what I thought they were all year, which is, you know, a top 25 team that probably caps at a Sweet 16 maximum.
Yeah, like they lost at Virginia Tech, which, again, road losses happen. I'm not going to blame them too much for that. But then to lose at home to North Carolina State, like both losses they had this week were against average teams, like bubble teams. Again, the road loss is whatever, but they can't defend the three-point line. They're an awful three-point defensive team.
I think NC State shot 16 for 30 that game.
Yeah, and Virginia Tech hit like 15 on 40% shooting.
Which Vatek does do at home. They shoot well at home.
Yeah, but even like Carolina's numbers, I think Carolina's sub 200 in both three-point attempts per field goal attempts allowed and three-point shooting percentage allowed. Like, they just can't guard the three-point line.
Yeah, and like Joel Berry, just probably one of my like sad disappointments of the year. You know what I mean? He was injured early. Just has the same. Like, I just had high hopes for him to average like 22, 23 a game on efficient shooting and leading this team to the next level. And I think him being, you know, very similar to the player he's been the last couple of years has hurt them and makes them, like I just kind of said, capping at this top 25 level.
I see. I'm not putting it on Berry. I'm putting it more on like Theo Pinson being inconsistent offensively.
Offensively.
You didn't have Cam Johnson, but even now, like, you know, you have him and still can't guard the 3-point line. You know, Kenny Williams has been better 3-point shooting, but, and then the bigs are just young. Like, I think Garrison Brooks and Sterling Manley are going to be good. They're just not going to be good this year.
Yeah. It's like they were 1 year away. Just kind of a weird UNC team, you know, after last year, who you lost. I mean, like, I think this is a good season for them despite everything they lost.
Yeah, but it's about right. I'm
not buying into them being like top 10 Final Four contender.
How good of a job is Kevin Keats doing down at North Carolina State? I mean, we like don't talk about him enough when we talk about the coaching hires of this offseason.
Well, didn't they lose by 50 last year to North Carolina?
Yeah.
He comes in arguably with less talent and goes into Dean Dome and wins.
And he's 3-0 against their true main rivals. They beat Duke and Wake Forest at home and then won at North Carolina. Like, I don't care who you are. That's an impressive start.
I forget their losses, but I'm guessing they have a couple bad losses in those
They lost to UNC Greensboro.
Yuck.
Yeah, that's not a great loss. But I think they're right on the bubble. I have them right in. I put out my bracketology today and I had them as the last four in.
Well, I think you've seen in the past with the committee, they take in some really key big wins, overtake some of the. If you have more big wins versus like maybe one or two small bad losses.
Right.
I think that outweighs the UNC Greensboro game.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they're a lot of fun to watch. I really enjoy watching them because they play up-tempo. They kind of press, and he lets them play free, like offensively.
Yeah. He didn't call timeout when UNC would go on a quick 7-0 run. He let his guys play through it, and they responded and moved the ball well into, you know, pretty unselfishly in an open shot. And usually, I think it was Freeman was 7-for-7.
What about the Duke-Virginia game for you stood out? Because that was the game of the day that everyone was kind of, you know, heading into the day, what everyone was kind of, you know, wanting to watch with two top five teams. You have the best offensive team versus the best defensive team. The two best teams in the ACC. What's your takeaway from that game? If I said, what's the one thing you took away? What's the one thing that you took away?
One thing? Oh man. I guess how real Virginia is to making their first Final Four this year. Kyle Guy is a big-time baller who makes good shots and big shots, tough shots, floaters, three-pointers, deep three-pointers, hand in the face. I'm so sick of watching Duke play and not ever getting better at guarding anybody. It's seriously disgusting.
How about the fact they didn't have a sub the entire second half?
Did the bench play 8 minutes?
Yeah, he didn't make a sub the second half.
Oh, I mean, like, that is a bad recipe.
It is not talked about enough how Krzyzewski really doesn't develop his bench.
I just don't really know who he could develop. And the problem is,
I mean, Alex O'Connell's a wing that can shoot, that can kind of handle the ball as a freshman. You know, where's he? What about Delorier? You know,
it may not be develop as much as it is trust.
Yeah, but that's still on. I mean, that comes with development. Like, if you're not if he doesn't let him play, how can you develop or trust him?
I mean, you get better in practice. I know that for a fact. You know, I didn't play my freshman year, but I got better because I got to expand in practice. But I don't know what their practices are like.
Right. Right.
And how much skill development and how much scout team there is, or if it, you know, I don't know the flow of their practice, but Marvin Bagley is absolutely ridiculous. Like,
he's so
the
good. Pitches
and his length, the bounce that he has.
The game just looks in slow motion with him, too.
Man.
Like, his finishes, like, he just kind of glides across the lane or to the hoop. He looks like he's in slow motion.
He looks like he's not trying.
Right, but that's what I mean. And, like, imagine if he plays hard.
Like, because of that, it looks – I don't want to say it doesn't look more impressive. It just is more impressive that he's able to do that.
It's and I mean, good luck keeping him off the glass.
Yeah, I saw you had him number one on your big board.
I still have him number one, but like,
I don't see how you can't. I haven't seen, you know, a lot of Luka.
Yeah,
but
I mean, honestly, I'm debating putting Ayton at number one. Like, they're so similar, in terms of talent level and things like that. But
where do you have Jaren Jackson?
I had Jackson 6.
He keeps like coming up the list more and more and more every time I watch him. I just see so many good things out of him.
Stay out of foul trouble.
Well, I mean, yes, but that could be a product of the college game.
It could, but he also just commits a lot of dumb fouls, like legit dumb fouls.
Yes, but I think that's part of his growing process.
Oh yeah, because he's super young too.
To me, that is a top five pick. His ability to step out and shoot from deep at above 40%, I think he might be.
Yeah, he can protect the rim.
I saw him get an offensive rebound and go coast to coast as well against Illinois, against three guys. I mean, I know it's Illinois, but still, he's done some impressive things where, man, I can't wait to watch him at the next level develop. Jalen Brunson today solidified my mind. I don't care what Trae Young has done. To me, the way he does it, as efficient as he does it with the number one team in the nation, he is the most valuable player in college basketball.
Yeah, I think I would still have Trae Young as my National Player of the Year pick. But, I mean, Brunson's a very close number two now. I mean, his – like, any other year, he's like a clear runaway favorite for Player of the Year. And the fact that he – he can beat you so many different ways. He's developed his game from, you know, freshman year being a role player alongside Archie Diacono in the backcourt to last year being kind of that second guy with Josh Hart to now being the go-to guy, even with Mikal Bridges breaking out, like, Brunson's the go-to guy. And, like, today against Marquette, he showed it by going into the post, playing bully ball, stepping out, shooting off the catch, off the dribble, getting to the mid-range. Like, he can beat you.
Transition Euro-stepping around people. Yeah.
He can beat you any different way.
Is the ultimate full package. I see him as probably not getting drafted in the first round.
I don't know if he will. Like, he might be a late first round pick. I had him 20.
Regardless, I have him in the NBA because he's going to play his way onto a team if he's not drafted in the first round.
He's the perfect backup point guard in the NBA.
I think he can grow into a bigger role. I really think he has that potential, like a Kyle Lowry type body, like a bulldog type point guard. He just every time I watch, I'm so impressed and with his poise, and that is so hard to find.
Yeah, and like I said, it's just, you know, the only thing is, you know, can he finish, you know, at the rim at the NBA level? That's kind of his biggest question mark for me. But he can step in and be your backup point guard right off the bat, and I think you're fine.
Yeah,
no, in terms of an NBA, you know, backup point guard, obviously, but
I wasn't high on him. I think you could go back to an early podcast that we did. I was not high on him. Didn't think he had a chance to do enough to, you know, get a stock this high. And man, he has completely impressed me.
Yeah, I was the complete opposite. I had him as my preseason National Player of the Year.
Yeah, no, you
were. I was all in on him just because I love his game so
much. You were also all in on Seton Hall. That just made me think of that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm glad that they kind of comfortably won today.
Yeah, they killed the crap out of DePaul, but yeah. I think they need to get back on track. They could have used that win against Xavier at home.
They could have, and that's what, you know, people kind of freaking out about them, but their two losses aren't bad losses, right? Like, they got blown out at Creighton. That'll happen. And then they blow the game. Like, they had the lead, and they blew the game at home against Xavier. And that's the alarming part, is the fact that they blew the lead at home against a team that I think is pretty comparable to them. But, you know, they had the week off, and they go in and get a comfortable road win against a weaker opponent, which is what they should do. I still think this is a team that could, you know, if they made a Final Four, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to touch on that quickly, you know, because every team that makes a Final Four, you can go back and look at all their season, all throughout the course of their season, you'll find a 2-game losing streak, a bump in the road. Like, it happens to every team. And so I'd be curious if they have another one of those leading up to March, or if they just build off this DePaul win.
They probably will, because it's the Big East.
True. Like, there's a lot of top-heavy Big East teams that are hard to win at on the road.
They still have to host Villanova. They still have to go to Xavier. They already played Creighton. I think they have to play Marquette still. Like, there's still teams that are good enough to beat them. So it's like, if they lose two in a row, I'm not going to be surprised. Big East is good, man. I really enjoy watching the Big East play.
Could this be the first year that I don't know who it is anymore. So Villanova, Purdue, and Virginia, those three, could those three all be in the Final Four, or just because of the way college basketball is and the tournament never working out that way, is only one of them going to make it?
I mean, I would probably bank that only one makes it as opposed to all three making it. Like, if you make me bet one or three, I'll probably bet one.
What if it was 1.5 over-under? Under was, like, minus 200, and was, like, plus 150.
I'd bet over just for the value.
Just for the value?
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were, like, that confident in saying, you know what, like, I like all three, but blank.
I mean, I think there are the three favorites to get there, but like, Villanova could still be a 2 seed. Like, they still have to come to Xavier. Let's say Xavier wins out, or, you know, wins all but one game, then goes and wins the Big East tournament too, and gets 2 wins over Villanova. Xavier's probably a 1 seed over Villanova. And then let's say Virginia as the one seed gets Villanova as the two seed, and they play in the Elite Eight. Villanova is a better matchup for Virginia. Like, there's still a lot of moving parts.
As soon as I watched the start of the Virginia Duke game, I was like, man, it's going to take a lot for this young Duke team to beat the way Tony Bennett is just grinding them up possession by possession.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily on defense. It's how they carved up Duke offensively.
Yeah, and that's also – I mean, Virginia – don't get me wrong, Virginia fans. You guys are very good offensively, but that was also more of a testament to how bad Duke is defensively.
Oh, gosh, was it horrendous.
So, it was the perfect kind of combination of
the
good offense
zone
and bad
to
defense.
Me, the 2-3 zone was, like, lucky. I mean, the zone isn't even that good.
It can be – like, when they're locked in, it's good.
For, like, 14 minutes of a game, good. It just was kind of fluky. It was at home, so it kind of worked. And I forget which guy it was that was in that missed three straight free throw line jumpers in a row because Hunter wasn't in yet. Like, it just was fluky.
Yeah.
2-3 zone.
What?
15 minutes of fluke in the second half.
Speaking of Final Four teams, what do you feel different about Kentucky after what they did yesterday at West Virginia?
I still don't. I think they have talent. We've talked about how this team has the talent to do something like that. I just don't trust them to win four straight games like I did past Kentucky teams in like the last 4 years.
I'm going to be very interested to see what happens now, because one of the problems with this team is they haven't handled success well. Like, when they get up, you know, 11 points, they let a team back into it instead of, you know, pushing the lead to 20. The lead gets down to 2. Now that they have this win at West Virginia, they play, I believe, Vanderbilt during the week, and then they go at Missouri. Like, those should be two winnable games. How do they react after this game? Like, if they come out and blow out Vanderbilt, I think it's the step that everyone's kind of expecting them to take. If they struggle with Vanderbilt or lose to Vanderbilt, then it's okay. This is just who they are.
Yeah, there's a couple teams that are popping up in my head, like Arizona State. Like, what happened to them? Were they a fluke start to the year?
They're so reliant on shooting the ball.
Yeah, and they're losing at home too, which is great.
They can't find anybody either.
Alabama was impressive in their home win. They made a case to jump into the NCAA tournament if they can avoid some home losses and go win a couple on the road, because they only win at home, it seems like. Man, what else is there? There's so much going on right now. Any other teams that I'm missing?
How about West Virginia now, though? Three of their losses in the last, 2 weeks have been massive blown second half leads. Two at home to Kansas and Kentucky, and then they're up 11 in the second half at Texas Tech.
So hard to believe with Javon Carter, too.
And, I mean, Dexter Miles is a senior.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, him being the point guard.
Right. And I'm saying just, like, that roster as a whole, though. Like, you know, they have experience, they have talent, they have a good coach. But, man, that's a storyline to watch now. Like, them just blowing leads.
Yep, and another team that was kind of – Texas Tech, like, outside of Keenan Evans, if he's having an off game offensively, that team scares me.
Yeah, Zach Smith being hurt is kind of a thing that people are starting to talk about more now. He's pretty important to that team. But like you said, it's Keenan Evans or bust with them offensively.
Yep. It's Keenan or pray that you just get into a 40-40 slugfest offensively. Which is what it felt like for the majority of the game until Keenan Evans got hot. Yeah.
Who's your – speaking of Texas Tech, who's your coach of the year right now? Who's your national coach of the year?
Probably biased because I've watched a lot of them. Chris Holtmann. I don't see how you can't give it to Chris Holtmann. They were picked 11 – oh, maybe even Bruce Pearl, as crazy as that sounds.
So I put out my top five today. I want
your – those two on your top five?
So I had number one, Tony Bennett, number two.
That's fair. They weren't even preseason top 25.
Nope. Number two, Jay Wright. Number three was Chris Beard at Texas Tech. Number four was Chris Holtman. Number five, Matt Painter. And then I put an asterisk and said, Bruce Pearl's probably in there. I just have no idea what the hell to do with everything going on.
Fair. But I think you got to avoid worrying about what's going on and still putting him as coach of the year because of being 19-2 when this was not expected, losing guys. I still can't believe they're 19-2.
I know. I just don't know where to put them when you look at, like, you know, I look at coach of the year, kind of everything involved when it comes to coaching, and, well, the FBI investigation is part of coaching.
Yeah, true.
I mean, what he's done on the court is one of the five best jobs. It's one of the six best jobs. I think those are tough. There's a lot of dudes that are, like, in consideration for National Coach of the Year. I'm fascinated to watch it.
I just don't know if we have anything else that we need to, like, extremely touch on in depth.
I want to ask you about Wisconsin basketball.
Okay. I can answer that.
If Ethan Happ leaves this year, when will they be good again?
If Ethan Happ leaves this year, so they won't be good next year. They still wouldn't be good the year after that. And then the next year they would. So they'd be 3 years away.
How weird is it to see Wisconsin just struggling again? Not even struggling, just getting, like, their ass kicked night in,
yeah,
night out.
Like, when you're down 10, it feels like 25.
Yeah. And it's like the ball is tipped and you're just like, we're immediately down 8-0 to start this game.
That's how it is every game on the road. It was Iowa, it was Purdue, which was like 18-5.
Right.
So I was talking about this with Gosser a little bit. Like, it just sucked because they finally played as good as they could with this roster almost without hitting shots against Michigan State, and they had cut it to 6. And then Michigan State went down and hit a 3, and it was 9. And then it was like it was over. It was like we gave it our best shot with momentum, with everything, and it was still like not even close. You know what I mean? That was such like a slap in the face feeling. I was like, man, like, that's what it's come to now. If that makes sense.
It's what has to change for them to be good again. Do you think they need to switch the swing offense? Do they need
I don't think you need to switch anything. I think if you look at the three freshmen that were recruited specifically by guard, I think they match what the goal is. And I think if you look at the junior class, the honest truth is it sets five guys in one class not reaching. Man, that sets you back a long way, especially with the imbalance of scholarships. It was really the perfect storm. And when Bo left and Haugard got the job and the transition there, it was really just a perfect storm. And that's why I think it's going to be a little bit wow. Because if you look at Nate Reavers, you can see why they wanted to redshirt him. Right. Because they know how good he was going to be long term. And he's growing. He's doing a great job in his short time of playing as a freshman. Brad Davison with one shoulder, he's doing way, way more than he should have anyway to this point.
How excited are you for him to be the most annoying player in college basketball for 4 years?
I'm not that excited for it.
He's going to set a record for most charges taken.
It's slowing down because referees are finally picking up on a little bit of it, a little bit. I've definitely noticed. I can see. I usually look at the assistant coaches. Like, I remember watching Tim Miles. He would, like, call ref out by name and be like,
right,
come on, Terry. You know, I can see it every time that he takes a charge. One that probably isn't a charge, the coaches notice it. And they, like, immediately call out the referee by name. And they literally just say, come on, DJ, or come on, Terry, or come on, Gene. Whoever it is, they literally all say the same thing, so it's kind of hysterical. But I think Brad will learn to pick and choose when it's right. He's just giving it all he's got. He's still young, and I feel bad that he has to do so much and feels like he has to put everything on his back and shoulders. Right. But he does. That's kind of what's happened.
I want to ask you this. As a former Wisconsin player and a Wisconsin fan, were you happy that the coaching hire was just in-house, or would you have wanted to see a true coaching search? And maybe it still ends up with guard, but at least, you know, a true coaching search as opposed to, you know, here are the keys, just handing it down from, you know, father to son type deal.
No, Coach Guard absolutely deserved the job with everything he had been through with Bo. Bo had molded him for this position. And I think you've seen that Coach Guard can coach. It's just been, it's been the crazy circumstances of everything. He took a talented team that was dysfunctional and turned them around when they were 1-3 in conference to win 8 straight to 2 Sweet 16s. You don't do that if you can't coach. I don't care how much talent you have. You have to be able to coach to do that. And so he's proved that, and it's been a fluke year. He needs to get more Brad Davison, Nate Reavers, Kobe King-type recruits that are going to be good players that fit his system. And that's the problem with the question you asked me. I think that's going to take time.
Yeah, the reason I asked it that way is –
class, and Ethan's going to be gone after next year, and then, you know, Nate and Brad and Kobe are still going to need another year to learn how to fully embrace the system and how to win in it, that the year after that they'll have a chance.
Yeah, the reason I phrased it that way is I've had people ask me, you know, does this feel like a UConn Kevin Ollie situation where, you know, you had success early on, obviously Ollie with the title, and, you know, Guard with the 2 Sweet 16 runs, where it wasn't a true coaching search, and now you find yourself in year 6, and you're going, oh no, what's next?
I think it's a similar situation, but too soon on the Wisconsin end. Yeah, because of all the circumstances.
So would you say if this freshman class doesn't kind of live up to expectations, then it's fair to start kind of worrying?
Correct. Yes, I think this is – you'll be judged by this class, and what their success is, and not this year, but maybe a little next year. You need to show promise towards the second half of the season as they are sophomores, and then when they are juniors, that is the year.
I like that. All right, any other final words?
That's all I got.
All right, follow the show. Rate, review, subscribe, please. That helps with everything. You can follow the show at Fundamental ASD. Shoot both of us follows, and until then, we will talk to you guys next time.